Educational Communications and this station present Environmental Directions with Nancy Perlman. On this series, we explore the effects of human influence on the Earth's ecosystems and discuss solutions to environmental problems which affect the quality of life on this planet. Environmental Directions gives you the kind of information you need to help you participate in decisions impacting your community, the nation, and the world. Now, here's your host, Nancy Perlman.
Hello. For the next half hour, we are going to be talking about reactions to the Los Angeles fires, especially by people in Topanga, California, as reflected in the play The People of Pompeii at the Will Geer Theatricum Botanicum, with my guest, Bernardo Cubría, who is a Mexican-American award-winning screenwriter and playwright. He has penned the feature screenplay Like It Used to Be with Gina Rodriguez, is attached to direct, star in, and produce with her company, I Can and I Will Productions. Additionally, he's in development on a feature film based on boxer Ryan Garcia. As a playwright, Bernardo Cubría is known for incisive satirical works that examine identity, belonging, and cultural performance from a very personal perspective. His acclaimed plays include The Play You Want, about a Latino playwright, deemed not Latino enough, winner of the Ingenio Award for the new play by a Latinx playwright. Another play includes Crabs in a Bucket, which poked fun at competition among Latino creatives in Hollywood and was recipient of the Los Angeles Drama Critics Circle Award for playwriting. The Giant Void in My Soul received the Ovation, Stage Raw, and Los Angeles Drama Critics Circle nominations for playwriting. And his The Hispanic, Latino, Latina, Latinx, Latine Vote is a political satire produced by the Will Geer Theatricum Botanicum during the 2024 election season that lampooned politicians who view the vastly diverse Latino electorate as a single monolithic voting bloc. Other awards include the Smith Prize for Political Theater and the BETC Generations Award. Welcome. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It means a lot.
I thoroughly enjoyed my evening last night at the Outdoor Theater in Topanga to see your new play, The People of Pompeii. It's a beautifully done production. It has both dark elements and funny elements. It covers the people of Topanga. So why do you name it The People of Pompeii?
It was kind of inspired, the title, and spoiler alert, because it's a part of the play, right? But the title came from, so the play was written, the first draft, in a sort of fever dream after the 2025 Palisades fires. Our community here in Topanga, we were all evacuated for 3 weeks. And I remember as we were driving out of Topanga, there was ash falling from the sky as we drove through Altadena. And my daughter, who was 2 at the time, asked me if it was raining. And I got very emotional and I started thinking about the last time I'd seen ash falling from the sky. And it was in Mexico City, because the volcanoes in Mexico City are still active and from time to time they'll spew ash into the air. And then that led me to thinking about Pompeii and the story of the people there and how we would have always been told they were surprised by the volcano. And I thought, no, they weren't. Because, of course, volcanoes spew ash for days or weeks even before they erupt. And I just imagine those people in Pompeii looking at ash falling from the sky, and rather than doing something about it, they just continued on with their lives. And that felt sort of like apropos to what it's like living in this country nowadays with the environment, with the politics, you know, that there's this feeling that ash is raining from the sky and we got to do something, people. That's where the title comes from.
What is the play about?
So the play follows this couple, Carlos and Vera, that is obviously inspired by my own marriage, and it's set in the aftermath of the fires. People have just moved back to Topanga from being evacuated, and Vera decides to host a dinner party with her closest friends to kind of celebrate that our community is still standing. Through chocolate mushrooms and EDM and sort of the cracks in the community get exposed a little bit, but also the beauty of Topanga and how people came together. And it's a dinner party gone wrong play in the tradition of some of the great plays like that, like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, you know, I'm Only Stealing from the People I Admire. And that's the play. It's Dinner Party Gone Wrong, and hopefully it has something to say about the world.
You certainly did say a lot, and it was great entertainment as well.
Thank you. That means a lot. Thank you.
Topanga, or Topanga Canyon, as it is often referred to, is in the Santa Monica Mountains. There are state parks nearby, national recreation areas, down toward the beach. You have all sorts of ecosystems, but those ecosystems do like fire. You're south of Malibu. You're north of Santa Monica. You're west of Los Angeles. It's a beautiful community. And you raise the issue in your play among the various characters. Do you stay? Do you leave? You know the fires are going to come again. What are you going to do? Because you and your wife, who both performed in the play, are longtime residents of the area.
Yeah, that was sort of the discussion that we had, and I think a lot of people had, as we all came back, right? Like, how do you react to a moment like this? My wife, to be very honest here, was someone who felt, of course we're not leaving. Natural disasters hit lots of places all over the world, and people stay, right? In New Orleans, they have hurricanes. Where I grew up in Houston, Texas, we would have hurricanes all the time, and we never thought of leaving, right? And for me, not growing up in California, this was my first fire experience. You know, I just tend to run on anxiety and fear. That's kind of my MO. And so I was like, we got to get out of here. I was terrified. But you know, after allowing my emotions to calm down, you start to think, well, what makes a home? What makes a community? And what makes a community worth staying in? And the longer that I'm in Topanga, the more that I fall in love with this community and with the people. This is our home. And so we're not going to leave. That's kind of the decision we've made.
As you mentioned, all over the world, natural disasters do occur, whether or not they're floods, volcanoes. Los Angeles, I've experienced many earthquakes. I stay. You do need to be prepared, though. And you had one character comment that it was difficult because sometimes in these disasters, roads are closed. You need to have an evacuation plan. Sometimes what should take 15 minutes might take an hour to get to a safe area.
100%, especially for us newer residents. I have to point at myself, and I try to make fun of myself in the play, that sometimes those of us who are newer to the canyon get pretty perturbed by how inconvenient it can be at times, you know, because there are days where a 5-minute drop off to school takes you an hour because there's mudslides and the road is always closed and they're always fixing things because of where we live. Actually, there's a monologue in the play that I took directly from one of the performers who's amazing, Aaron Hendry. He posted on Topanga Locals this sort of long monologue after the fires where he said, Topanga's not convenient and it was never meant to be. And if you moved up here for that, you made a big mistake, you know? And I remember when I first read that post, I felt a little called out by it. But then as I read, I said, he's right. Why did I ever think that moving to the top of a mountain with one main road would be a super convenient, easy place to live in? I mean, it's kind of hilarious that I ever thought it would be.
Mountain communities don't always have all the roads and the accesses available to people. So one does have to plan accordingly and be prepared to leave if necessary during a disaster. As you say, you were evacuated. The Palisades fire brought attention. How close did that fire get to Topanga? We know that we had the fires in Pasadena and the Eaton Canyon area of Altadena, and we know Palisades had the fire, but how many acres did it cover and what did it destroy?
So I won't get any of the exact measurements or anything correct, but it did hit Topanga. I think it's important to say, I believe the numbers about 50 homes were lost in Topanga and people did lose their home, but ultimately we got incredibly lucky. I mean, for 3 weeks, I remember just being addicted to Watch Duty app and just watching the fire get closer and closer. And there are all these group chats, and sometimes people would think that the fire had come into the canyon, that certain buildings had been lost, and then you'd find out an hour later that it wasn't. But it came up right to the edge. At least emotionally, that's how it all felt here. A lot of our friends who live closer to the PCH, like, they weren't able to go back to their house because of smoke damage. I had friends who stayed and tried to protect their houses just by standing on the roofs, and they watched the fire. I mean, it was right in front of them. It was a very, very, very close call, and ultimately we got incredibly lucky, and we're all very grateful because so many of the sort of buildings and the institutions, even the theater that we're working at, it's a very, very special building with a lot of history, and the fact that it's still standing and that we get to perform the play on that stage, it's not lost on us how lucky we are.
You brought up 2 points. One is the fact that you had a character in your play who decided to stay and save his house, but you also mentioned the beautiful theater, Will Geer Theatricum Botanicum, and it's an outdoor theater. You feel the mountains, you see the mountains during the night, during the play. We actually saw an owl fly through. You thought maybe we were reacting to what you said in your play?
Yeah, I hate to admit this, but last night at opening night, I was further downstage. So I was the only cast member who didn't see, but an owl flew right next to one of the actors' heads. Is that correct? You were there. I didn't see it.
I saw it.
Yeah. And so, to be honest, there was a line that my wife had just said, and I didn't think it was a very controversial or great line, but all of a sudden the audience went, ooh, ooh. And I thought, wow, okay, I guess that line holds more weight than I expected. And then was pleasantly surprised. surprised to hear that it was actually an owl and that had nothing to do with the play.
It's nice to be outdoors, particularly this theater belonged outdoors. This theater, as you say, has an incredible history. I think we need to review why and how it existed, because it was established by a very famous actor who was blacklisted in the 50s, and he had to support his family, and he started a vegetable garden, and he started the theater, and now his daughter and granddaughter are directing, performing in the place. Tell us more. And also, at the site, there's a building that Woody Guthrie and Pete Seeger and all the famous folk singers of the 50s and 60s came and stayed at.
It's an amazing place to work. For me, finding the theater when we moved here was kind of like my salvation. I am just in awe. I mean, it is not lost upon me when I'm sitting backstage and thinking about these amazing artists who in the 50s had to fight for their freedom of speech, lost their careers, gave up everything to stand for what they believed in, right? Which I think we could all take a lesson from, especially in the current political climate. And then they came and hid out in the mountains and just started performing Shakespeare in the mud because they loved performing, they loved storytelling, they loved holding up a mirror to society, and they built this amazing theater with such a rich history. And to have Ellen be one of the co-directors who grew up as a kid performing on the very stage that we're performing on, and to have Willow, who as a little girl was like in Midsummer Night's Dream, now be one of the leads of our play, and just watch her be so brilliant in the piece. It's an honor. It's an honor. And you feel their presence, not to get too Topanga on your listeners, but you do feel the presence of the people of the past when you're on that stage. And it's an honor. It's an honor to walk through the doors that those political activists open for the rest of us.
It's important in a theatrical production to have people play characters. Casting is critical. How did you go about that? Who's included?
So it's an amazing cast. Aaron Hendry is a local Topanga actor who's worked on that stage for years, and he's in the piece along with Willow Gear, who we've spoken about, who's just fantastic. And then Amber Llewellyn and John Sprick are newer actors to this space. They just came into the audition and took the role. And in auditions, you're always just hoping that someone will come in and be the person and solve your problems, and that's what they did, and I'm so grateful to act alongside them. And then just want to shout out our design team, which is amazing and does perform miracles in that space. Our stage manager, Kaz Osborne, and we're just the Darby who's helping every single day. And then I want to shout out our director, Xochitl Romero, who co-directs with Ellen, and having both of them co-direct this piece really just strengthened it and made it what it is.
While you are the strength of the play as the main character and the playwright, it's important that you give the honors also to all the people that make it possible.
Of course. Yeah, theater is a collaboration. That's why I love it. No play happens with one person alone, and it's why it's my favorite art form, because a bunch of people make no money but still decide to drive an hour to Topanga every day because they care about telling stories, and it's just so meaningful.
And it's so different seeing something live than on a movie screen or a TV screen.
Exactly. It's why I think we're going to beat AI, because people are going to come back to the theater and realize that human connection exists in the theater. So come on out, people. Support LA Theater.
Please do that. The plays that I've seen at the theater include people of all generations. And at the very end, you had a very young boy come running down from the hills. What was he saying? Who was he?
Spoiler alert, big time. So if people want to stop listening at this point, but you know, it's a mushroom chocolate vision that my character is experiencing, right? A sort of hallucination, but it's meant to be a young boy in Pompeii who's warning the villagers that the volcano is about to blow and that we need to get out. And that's what the little boy's yelling at the audience, you know? The intention there as a writer is a sort of reminder that even though there is a kind of happy ending to the play, that the fire's still coming, the environment is still in need of our help, and it's a sort of final reminder for me, poetically, in a sort of magical realism way that says, hey, just because it feels nice at this last moment of the play doesn't mean the problems have been solved. Wake up, people. It's kind of the intention there, and it's meant to be funny as well.
This play focuses on the natural environment because of the fires and the people's relationships and reactions to the fire and to each other. You have written other plays that deal more heavily with political issues. You're not afraid to tackle some of those concepts of how do we view the voters and who do we vote for and who's voting for who.
I just am. I think, you know, playwrights tend to write about the issues they care about or things that are front of mind or the things that sort of haunt them at night, the existential questions. And I grew up in a very political home. I'm very grateful to my parents. My dad instilled reading the newspaper into us when we were young. In my home, we were always having lively debates from like the history of Cuba to Mexican independence to the border. You know, there was always sort of a desire to have open dialogue around complex issues. And obviously, obviously, to be frank, as a Mexican living in this moment of American history, you can't hide from it. You don't get to be apolitical because the politics is sort of at our front door. And so it's just something I think about a lot. And the way that I'm able to process how I feel about things or really try to understand when I'm feeling conflicted is by writing a play. That's always been how I process my emotions.
And I'm so pleased that you have written The People of Pompeii because it brings up so many different issues. It was a pleasure watching it. And I want to talk more about the ideas that you brought up in the play when we return in a moment with my guest, Bernardo Cubría, playwright and screenwriter.
Environmental Directions with Nancy Perlman continues with further discussion of the world's critical ecological issues. For more information, you may call 310-559-9160 or go to www.ecoprojects.org. Now, here's Nancy.
I'm speaking with Bernardo Cubría, who has written the play The People of Pompeii. It's currently playing for the next few months at the Wildgear Theatricum Botanicum in Topanga, California. I mentioned at the beginning of our interview that your play is about the people, the environment, the fires in Topanga Canyon in Southern California, not Pompeii. Wouldn't it be better to have the title The People of Topanga so people know what it's about instead of The People of Pompeii?
That's probably a better marketing title, you know, but I think for me, that's just what it feels like. Like, we are the people of Pompeii, and that's an important metaphor in the piece, and so that's what I decided to go with. Titles can always be better, but the one that we have now, I think, worked for me and my heart, and so that's what I'm going to go with. But you're probably right, the marketing-wise, it would be a lot better if it was just called The People of Topanga After the Fires.
Your play was so enjoyable because you talked about human relationships with the three couples in the play. You talked about ecological issues like the fires. You talked about other social issues. So many different themes that you brought beautifully together into a very enjoyable play, talking about some heavy issues, but you threw in lots of humor. What did you wish you had included, and what ideas did you wish you had more time to explore?
As a writer, I always wish I could go deeper, spend more time with it. It always feels like, oh God, am I sharing it already? It wasn't ready, and that sentiment has never left me, no matter how many times I've shared a piece of work. For me, the really important thing that I hope to do is to give nuance to all the points of view, right? I think it can be very easy in theater to present a sort of black and white worldview where the audience agrees with you already politically, and then we all feel good about ourselves and go home. And I really try in this piece to call myself out, to argue the other side of things that I may not necessarily agree with, but that I think it's important to give grounded, good arguments to any sort of issue, so that the real work is hopefully that people have nuanced conversations on the drive home or at the bar or in the lobby. That's what I hope I did, and that's what I always hope I did better. And that, but to me, plays are always a work in progress. And I do want to shout out very quickly that this play was commissioned by the Old Globe in San Diego, and if they had not done that, this play wouldn't have gotten written. And they've been very helpful in the development of the play, and between them and the Theatricum doing workshops and readings, that's how a play always gets better, is by including other people in the room and having people tell you where you're falling short.
I'm so pleased that you did write it, and it was really, really an enjoyable evening to watch all of you perform it. I just am still amazed that you all can memorize those lines for an hour and a half or 2 hours.
It's funny you say that. I haven't acted in a very long time, about 6 years, and my biggest fear when Ellen asked me to be in it was, besides playing myself and being opposite my wife and all of that, was, can I still learn lines? That was kind of terrifying. I go over them like a maniac because I'm older. I don't remember lines as well as I did in my 20s. It definitely is still very daunting. I will say, I don't pretend it's easy.
This play covered many different issues. I would love to see you write a play about Topanga again, but about the ecosystem, the wildlife, and how some people accept the mountain lion, the coyote, and the deer, and all the other creatures there, and how other people want to get rid of some of the wildlife, how some of the areas that still aren't developed need to be saved. Can you do it?
I don't know that I'm the writer for that. I don't know. You never know what you're going to write about or what you care about. I mean, I'll say this in a personal way. I'm not a very outdoors kind of guy. I'll be very honest. I grew up in Mexico City, Houston. I've always been a big city guy. And what's been wonderful about moving to Topanga is like learning to love those things. The first time I saw a coyote up here, I thought, oh my God, this is terrifying. And now I don't even flinch. I go, oh, look, there's the coyote. Oh, Outlook that has a baby, and it's been amazing. And like, one of my favorite things about performing at the Theatricum is you're hearing the birds, the crickets. You're like interacting with our wildlife. It almost feels like they're there to witness the play as well. I hope that if it's not me, that someone in the community writes a play about our neighbors, the animals and the wildlife around here, because it really is a very special part of living in the Santa Monica Mountains.
This play brings up many different issues in addition to reactions to the fires, how people responded, but it also brings up the concept of gentrification, because that's a problem not just in Topanga Canyon, but all over Southern California. I remember Topanga in my college days as a hippie. It was an outpost for the hippies, for the artistic community, for the liberals and the progressives. And yet your play talks about people moving in who are wealthy and buying property there and not necessarily reflecting the old history of Topanga. Can you explain how we deal with gentrification?
It's an incredibly complex topic. And to be very frank, when we first did a reading of an early draft of the play, Ellen hosted it at the theater. Willow was there as well. And we invited some Topanga community members to come. And the sort of major blind spot that people who had lived in the canyon for a long time brought up to me was, you're not really reflecting the point of view of the old school residents here, the people who did move up here in the 60s, who were hippies. And this sort of feeling of, hey, our community's starting to change, and what does that mean? Where does that leave us? I realized, oh my God, I'm the gentrifier, which sounds silly to realize this late living here, but I guess I didn't think of Topanga as a place that got gentrified until I was clearly shown my blind spots, and I had many. I was so moved by the kind of conversations that I kept having with old school residents about, what is it when all of this money all of a sudden arrives to a small town and raises the prices, and a lot of people have had to leave Topanga because they can't afford to live here anymore, and the sort of pain that that causes in the people whose friends are having to move because of financial hardship. And I think it's very indicative of the wealth disparity that's happening all over the world. It's an issue in our community, incredibly nuanced, and in that we also have to find a way to say, okay, there are new residents, and how do we meet in the middle? How can we honor its past while also building towards a future, because things don't stay the same forever? The play tries to tackle the nuance of that, and I don't pretend to have answers, but I hope that it at least leads to an interesting conversation in the lobby after.
We know that environmental justice, environmental issues from climate change, pollution, to social justice, women's rights, racial justice are all interconnected. You have beautifully woven many different issues and problems in a very creative way to have an audience enjoy themselves for an evening, but also contemplate some of these issues. You periodically in the play kept referring to your Mexican-American heritage, but if somebody looked at you, you don't look like what most people in Southern California think of as what a Mexican-American looks like. How do you respond to that?
That always makes me laugh, because I think for Mexicans, we're aware that we're not a monolith. I mean, Canelo Alvarez is a redheaded Mexican boxer. You know, I mean, I think that there's always sort of a kind of almost disappointment when people decide to tell me what a Mexican needs to look like, right? Like, that, it's always a part that just makes me laugh, to be frank. I think if you're from the community, it's not surprising, but I understand that stereotypes play a part in this world. But yeah, I mean, the reason that the play deals with that part of myself, which is very important to me, and my identity and my background and my culture, is that one of the things that was really challenging for me moving to Topanga is that it is not a diverse place. There obviously are people of color here. There are some minorities here, but we're small. We're a small but mighty group. To be totally frank, the hardest part for me when we first got here was I'd never lived this far away from Latino people. I jokingly say this in the play. My biggest note for the canyon is that I wish that it was more diverse.
As you point out, Mexico is a diverse country of immigrants, just like the United States, from many parts of Europe. Not everybody has the indigenous people's blood, so there is a diversity of look, just like in the United States. What's an American look like? I thought it was very important that you brought up some of these related issues. I'm curious how it was performing with your real wife. In the play, you were both a married couple.
To be honest, it's been my favorite part of this process. Not to get too personal, but I've been a theater person for a very long time, and one of the really hard things about being married to a theater person is that they're often at the theater, right? And so one of the big challenges with my wife and I, we've been together 19 years now, and that often I'm gone at night, or I'm gone for tech rehearsal. And this was the first time ever where we got in the car together to go do the thing.
You mentioned how talented your wife is. She does documentaries. What can we look forward to?
So my wife has a ton of documentaries out there. If you look up Lauren Saffa editor. I mean, there are just so many amazing movies that she made. Here in our house, we have this Emmy that she won for this amazing 30 for 30 she did called Blackfeet Boxing, which is about an indigenous community in the north of the U.S. A lot of those women go missing, and it's a big problem. And so one of the members of that community builds a boxing gym to teach women how to have self-defense. And it's this beautiful, beautiful movie.
If people go to your website, www.bernardocubria.com, spelled BERNARDOCUBRIA.com, will they see pictures of both of you?
No. So to be honest, I don't really update that website. So people go, it's great. Honestly, the best way to keep in contact with me is all of my plays are on this website called New Play Exchange. You can find any play in the United States on there and you can read it. And then on Instagram, that's actually where you could see pictures of us. My handle, at Pinche Cubria, P-I-N-C-H-E, and then my last name, C-U-B-R-I-A.
It's really better to go to the theater and see you live, see
exactly.
Both of you live at the
yeah.
theater performing this play. It's not held all the time because the theater has other productions. They always have Shakespeare all summer long, but you do perform periodically.
Yes, I would like to plug the other plays. The work at the Theatricum is really fantastic, and the actors there are quite extraordinary, and they have Midsummer Night's Dream, Treasure Island, Waiting in the Wings, and Romeo and Juliet alongside our play. We perform once a week, and then the other plays are there as well.
You had some great elements in the play. I loved your improvisational dance. That was quite creative. You also presented many different ideas, not directly to the environment with the climate catastrophe, but the fires are a climate issue. Can you do a play really tackling what's going on with our environment and destruction of our wildlife? And now that you're in the Santa Monica Mountains and Topanga, maybe you'll be lucky enough to see a mountain lion and some of the other creatures that we've been trying to save for decades.
So we actually have seen mountain lions right outside our front door. It terrifies my mom in Texas that, you know, they're right outside, or that we have coyotes. But I think it's imperative that artists talk about global warming and what's happening to our planet. It is the issue of our lifetime. I have a favorite comedian. One of them is named Mark Maron, and he has a very funny joke. He says where when we look back on what happened to the planet, we'll all think we did enough because we brought our own bags to the grocery store. And that always makes me laugh because I think we can all be doing more. We can't just sit around and pretend it's not happening anymore. You know, I think it's just about the thing we can all do is join a local organization and ask the people who have done the work and who have done the research, like, well, what can we do? What can I do to be helpful? Even if it's just bringing coffee to a meeting, there are ways to get involved. Yeah, there's just these amazing organizations here in Topanga who are doing that work.
How long did it take you to write this play, The People of Pompeii? There were so many issues involved. Did you wish you could have included another issue or explore some of the issues that you did present in a little more depth? I felt that you had a great balance between the personal relationships of the three couples in the play versus the issues of the environment, the fire, the racism, and politics briefly mentioned. There were many different things. What were you most pleased about presenting, and what did you wish you could have had more time to present?
The truth is, I always feel like I fell short as a writer. I don't know how anyone can present a play and feel like I nailed that.
You did nail it.
That's very kind of you to say.
Thank you so very much for writing, performing The People of Pompeii at the Will Geer Theatricum Botanicum. Thank you for being my guest.
Oh, thank you so much. It means a lot. Thank you for supporting the work, and I hope that people will come out and join us.
I hope so, too. I have been speaking with Bernardo Cubria, who is a playwright and screenwriter. I'm Nancy Perlman. Thank you very much for joining us, and do tune in again next week.
If you would like free information about these environmental issues, go to www.ecoprojects.org or call 310-559-9160. Environmental Directions with your host, Nancy Perlman, is a community affairs program of the nonprofit organization Educational Communications and this station.